Genealogy by Tim, Season 2, Episode 4, recorded April 14th, 2022. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Genealogy by Tim G. I had been meaning for some time to devote an episode to my family's Ukraine connections. Of course, Ukraine has been in the news quite a bit since the Russian invasion of that country began in late February. I wanted to pinpoint a number of locations of family interest in Ukraine so that members of my extended family can follow along with the news and hope for the best in those areas. Links to relevant stories and maps will be in the show notes, and you'll want to check that out as well. We're talking about Ukraine today on Genealogy by Tim. Before getting into all the locations of family interest, I wanted to do a little bit of a history of the area. And this is by no means a scholarly research. This is literally 10 minutes of Google research. But I wanted to impress upon you, my listeners, that the region was quite different then than it is today. The geopolitical lines have moved around quite a bit within the past century and a half, and it's important to interpreting some of the documents that say where our family members are from. I wanted to start around the late 1700s or early 1800s. It was during this time that the Russian Empire acquired the land that is now called Ukraine. Of course, there's a history before this that I don't know anything about, but a Washington Post article entitled "How Ukraine Became Ukraine in Seven Maps" provides just enough of a background for our purposes. I wanted to focus first on the second map in that series, which shows the region around the eastern border of Ukraine as part of Russia going back to antiquity, as far as I can tell. In 1667, Russia acquired Kiev and most of the land east of it from what was then the Polish-Lithuanian Commonwealth. For my family history purposes, things get interesting around 1768 when Russia begins acquiring the Crimean Khanate. This region contains some recognizable family history locations such as Odessa on the shore of the Black Sea and Mykolaiv, which is slightly northeast of Odessa. In 1772, Russia began to acquire a much larger swath of land from the Polish-Lithuanian Commonwealth, including most of the land west of Kyiv and north of the former Crimean Khanate. This acquisition brought another location of family interest, Mogilev-Podolsky, not to mention most of what is now present-day Ukraine under Russian control by 1795. Only the westernmost portions of present-day Ukraine, including Lviv and land just south of it, was not under Russian control by that time. That part of the country was then under the control of Austria. By the turn of the 19th century, what became known as the Russian Empire controlled most of the land which is now Ukraine, and continued to do so well into the 20th century. So when we look at our family history documents, at many of our known Anflik and Snyder ancestors who were born between 1855 and 1906, their birthplace is always shown to be Russia, even though they were born in what is now known as Ukraine. World War I redrew the map, and Ukraine appears to have enjoyed a brief period of independence, but this was upended by the Russian Civil War, which lasted through 1922. Out of the Russian Civil War emerged the Ukrainian Soviet Socialist Republic, which remained one of the constituent republics of the Soviet Union until the latter's dissolution in 1991. It wasn't until then that we see a truly independent Ukraine, and that is why you won't see the name Ukraine on any of our family history documents, but you will find the individual cities and towns referenced in those documents on a map of modern-day Ukraine. Throughout the present war in Ukraine, it's always easy to side with the invaded nation and against the invader nation. And definitely to say well, my people are from Ukraine, so I must side with them. But things are complicated, and there are a couple caveats. While it is true that my ancestors were from the region that is now known as Ukraine, they also fled the region that is now known as Ukraine. And this is likely because many of my ancestors who were Jewish faced regular violence in the form of pogroms, which were a kind of riot where Christians went into Jewish neighborhoods, vandalized, looted, and attacked Jewish people and establishments. In 1904, the London Times published an explanation of pogroms that was republished in several newspapers across North America and titled "Russian Pogrom Explained." At the risk of putting all my faith in one account, I believe it gets the gist across, and I'll read it to you here. The article begins. It is perhaps because the word pogrom is not understood in Western Europe that occurrences at Kisinev and Gomel were described as massacres. There is an important distinction, for the pogrom is a national institution, and it was not a massacre in the ordinary sense of the term, but a pogrom that took place in these towns. The word grom means thunder, and the word pogrom implies a desire to shatter or destroy, as a thunderstorm destroys. A mob assembled for purposes of devastation, however, does not constitute a pogrom unless it follows certain well-established and characteristic rules. Thus, until now, pogroms have only been directed against Jews, though the system could be extended to other sections of the population. The pogrom was first instituted after the assassination of Alexander II in 1881, when anti-Semitism and reaction flourished under General Ignatieff. The pogrom was encouraged as a means of terrorizing the Jews. The method is as follows. First, there is a period of incubation. Hints are received "from above," in quotes, by the local police that it would be well to give the Jews a lesson. It will then so happen that some 3 or 4 months before Easter, a propaganda is commenced in the dram shops, cheap restaurants, and other places of popular resort. Rumors are circulated that the Jews are exploiting the people, and that they're enriching themselves, and they have killed, for ritual purposes, a Christian child. Then, when Easter comes, the smallest incident suffices for a pogrom. At Kishinev, it was a squabble with a Jew who was managing a merry-go-round. At Gomel, it was a dispute with a woman selling herrings. The first manifestation of a pogrom is made by small boys. They march around the town, showing and throwing stones and smashing the windows of houses inhabited by Jews. If the pogrom has commenced spontaneously, or its occurrence is not considered desirable by the authorities, the police arrest some of the small boys and give them a flogging in the public square. And there the matter ends. But if on the morrow it is ascertained that no boys have been flogged, a mob of adults now gathers, and matters become more serious. The houses of the Jews are entered, though as a rule no one is hurt and only furniture is smashed. But above all, the great feature of a pogrom is the bringing of bedding to the windows and discharging of the feathers it contains into the streets below. The Jews are very great consumers of poultry, and they carefully keep the feathers. Thus, feather beds become a mark of social distinction and indicate the wealth of the family. To open a feather quilt cuts the pride and purse of the Jew. The scattering of the feathers also greatly amuses the crowd, and it is considered fine sport. The police stand aside, only interfering should the Jews resist. Then they separate the contending parties. On the morning of the third day, the governor or local authorities issue proclamations professing to be very grieved at what has occurred and forbidding the people to assemble in the streets. Perhaps 2 or 3 mujiks are arrested and publicly flogged. Here the pogrom terminates, and such pogroms have taken place off and on for now more than 20 years, so that they fail to cause any particular concern unless they are allowed to continue for the third day. By that time, the criminal instincts of the crowd have developed, and the professional criminal ceases to fear police. Then it is that men are murdered and women violated. A pogrom is, therefore, a five-act drama. First, there is the propaganda. Secondly, some squabble that supplies the pretext. Thirdly, little boys go forth to see if the authorities are willing. And if they are not punished for smashing the windows, then the fourth act begins, and the mob breaks the furniture and scatters the feathers of the bedding. Finally, at the fifth act, the lowest passions finding themselves unrestrained, rape and murder terminate the drama. But from the very first pebble thrown by a small boy to the last murder committed, it is all absolutely under control of the government. And that ends the article. That was a 1904 account of what pogroms are that was originally published in the London Times and was republished in several newspapers across North America. I mean, I read that one directly from the Montreal Gazette. But this is what Jews encounter regularly throughout various parts of Eastern Europe and Russia. The article mentioned the Kishinev pogrom, which had then recently taken place in the neighboring governorate of Bessarabia, now known as Moldova, and the Gomel pogrom, which took place in the region now known as Belarus. These were apparently full five-act pogroms, as Wikipedia reports 49 Jews were killed and 92 gravely injured in Kishinev. And the Jewish Virtual Library reports that 8 Jews were killed, many wounded, and much property was looted in Gomel. A little closer to home for my Anflik ancestors, Odessa was a site of pogroms throughout the 1881 and 1906 period. It was off around Easter time that rumors of a pogrom would spread, and occasionally those rumors would bear out, Wikipedia reports, with the tacit approval of the Tsarist authorities. These pogroms culminated in 1905 when, over the course of 4 days in October, Russians, Ukrainians, and Greeks killed over 400 Jews and damaged or destroyed over 1,600 Jewish properties. Fortunately, my Anflik ancestors had left for America by then, arriving in America variously between the years of 1889 and 1903. Kahila Links of JewishGen.org reports that there was a pogrom in Mykolaiv in 1899, some 80 kilometers south of Voznesensk, where the Anfliks likely lived at the time. So danger was coming closer to the family, and I imagine this played a role in their decision to flee to America. My cousin Daryl, a descendant of Mary Anflik, told me recently that someone in her family had a twin that was killed in a pogrom. We're not sure which side of the family that was on, whether it was on our shared Anflik side or on another side of her family, but if there ever were a reason to hightail it out of there, that would be it. You know, the Snyder family of my great-grandmother was not much safer in Mogilev-Podolsky. Kahila Links reports that a pogrom took place there in 1905. Unlike the Anfliks, who left before 1905, many of the Snyders were still present in Mogilev for that event. The last of the known Snyders, Ava Lillian and Motel, did not arrive in America until about the time of the Russian Civil War in 1922. So, as natural as it is to cheer for the underdog Ukrainians during this war, many of their ancestors were not particularly kind to our ancestors, likely prompting our ancestors to leave for America. Our ancestors certainly left behind traces of their lives in Ukraine in the form of archival records, gravestone monuments, and old buildings they may have used or lived in, some of which might still stand. There may even be distant cousins there who remain, and for the sake of these things, I hope that our ancestral homeland remains safe from destruction, so that future research may be conducted there and that our potential living cousins may be discovered. And interestingly, the first cousin that I've been able to exchange correspondence with from that part of the world was born in Baku, Azerbaijan, while that was a constituent republic of the Soviet Union. He later moved to Russia and now lives in Moscow, so I'm also concerned for his well-being and that of his family in Russia as global economic sanctions are wreaking havoc on the Russian economy. Ultimately, I'm just looking forward to the powers that be settling their differences as soon as possible so the rest of us, Ukrainian, Russian, and American alike, can live on in peace. So we've reviewed some of the history of the region, why the Anflix and Sniders were considered Russian, and how life for them in what is now Ukraine was fraught with danger. Let's get into the specifics now of some Ukrainian locations that are of importance to Anflix family history, starting with Odessa. When you look at American family history documents of the Anflix born between 1876 and the end of the 19th century, they all mention Odessa as a birthplace. Odessa is a famous port city along the Black Sea, and this turns up a lot in the news as a place that the Russians would like to capture. It's a port of great strategic importance, but they never quite seem to make it. The Russians recently targeted an oil refinery with a missile strike, but as far as I can tell, there haven't really been Russian boots on the ground there, although I'm not sure how long that will last. Lewis and Henry Anflix identified Odessa as their place of birth on their American naturalization forms. And Harry identified Odessa as his birthplace on his English naturalization form. Lewis and Henry also identified Odessa as their birthplace on their military draft registration forms. The ladies, Mary and Anna, did not have their own naturalization documents or draft records. It may be assumed that Mary was born in Odessa, although I don't yet have any documents saying so. I have not yet found the naturalization documents for her husband, Harry Sirodi. And Mary died young in 1927, prior to the Social Security Act of 1935, so she doesn't have an application for Social Security number that might reveal this information. Anna, on the other hand, has these documents. Her husband, Harry McGill, identified Anna's birthplace as Odessa on his second attempted naturalization in 1934. Anna also identified her birthplace as Odessa on her application for Social Security number in 1950. So Odessa turns up most frequently in the Anflix documents and is a place of great interest to follow in the news about the recent invasion because there are likely to be birth records for most of the first generation Anflix immigrants in Odessa, and we want those kept safe. I have not yet seen any of those. Lewis is kind of an outlier here because his birth certificate has actually been located. According to the surname database on the Roots to Roots Foundation website, his birth record is on file at the state archives in the city of Mykolaiv. And that brings us to our second city of interest to Anflix family historians. The city of Mykolaiv has been in the news quite a bit as a model of resistance to Russian advancement. About 131 kilometers east-northeast of Odessa, and near the mouth of the Pivdeniba River, Mykolaiv is a port and shipbuilding city of strategic importance and has often been described as one of the last stops on the way to Odessa. So, Ukrainian resistance there has been nothing short of heroic. Despite its heroism, the city suffered some significant losses, including the scuttling of the Ukrainian Navy frigate Hetman Sahayadakhny and the Mykolaiv Regional State Administration building, which had a gaping hole torn through it by a Russian rocket. This, I believe, fortunately, was not the state archive building, which I hope is safe because it houses a number of essential family history documents, like, for example, Lewis's birth record. The presence of this document at the Mykolaiv State Archive suggests that Lewis was not born in Odessa, as he reported on his naturalization form. It seems like he was born somewhere in the Mykolaiv Oblast, of which the city of Mykolaiv is the administrative center. Other documents of great family history importance are at the Mykolaiv State Archive, including the death record of Lewis's father, Simon, and the marriage records of several Anflik ladies whose acquaintance I have yet to make. This brings us to the next city of Anflik historical importance in Ukraine, and that is the smaller city of Voznesensk. Voznesensk is about 88 kilometers up the Pivdeniba River from Mykolaiv, and this city is noted on most Anflik ships' passenger lists as the city of last residence before the family's emigration to America. Here again, Lewis is an outlier. He actually sailed from Liverpool to Canada and traveled to America from up there. And his Canadian border crossing list of January 1899 identifies his place of last residence as Odessa. What might have happened is that around January of 1899, the family decided to leave Odessa. Lewis struck out on his own and made his way to America, while the rest of the family perhaps returned to its roots in Voznesensk, in the heart of the Mykolaiv Oblast, where Lewis was actually born and his father, Simon Anflik, died. Katie Anflik's apparent father, Aaron Karanchak, lived in Voznesensk, and it was to his residence that Lewis sent tickets from America to eventually bring the rest of the family across the Atlantic. Henry and Harry made the trip in July of 1901. Their mother Katie and sisters Mary and Anna made the trip in September of 1903. All of their ship's passenger lists identified Voznesensk as the city of last residence for all of them. Voznesensk has been in the news as a town that has fiercely resisted Russian advancement. They actually destroyed their own bridge across the Pivdeniba River to prevent Russians from crossing and moving on to Odessa. One more sibling here deserves mention, and that is Lewis's full sister, Sophia. Our known Russian cousins in Moscow are descended from her, and her life took quite a different path from those who went to America. She got married and stayed behind in Eastern Europe. Her first big move was to Feodosia in Crimea. Crimea has been a long-contested area of Ukraine that was actually annexed by Russia in the wake of its previous invasion back in 2014. Since it has been under Russian control for the past 8 years, there doesn't seem to be much danger there, and the city hasn't really appeared in the news to my knowledge, but it is another place of interest to follow. Sophia eventually moved from Feodosia to Baku in present-day Azerbaijan, where she lived out the rest of her life. My Russian cousin was born in Baku, and he later moved to Moscow. So, those are the places of interest of the immediate Anflik family members, but there are other places of interest associated with the Anflik spouses. And I'll go right down the line with them, starting with Lewis's wife, Esther Leibowitz. She was from Bucharest, Romania, which does not seem to be a part of the current conflict, Romania being a neighboring country to the west and south of Ukraine. Over in England, Harry's wife, Rose Cyprus, was born in England to immigrant parents. Her father was Austrian and her mother was Polish, so they also seem to be out of the danger zone. Anna's husband, however, it's Harry McGill. He seems to have been born and bred in Kyiv, so Ukraine's capital is of utmost importance to my cousins on Team Anne McGill. Harry McGill claims to have been born in Kyiv, and his passenger list identifies Kyiv as his last place of residence. Mary Anflik Sorodi's husband, Harry Sorodi, is a little more interesting of a case. I have found neither passenger list for him nor a naturalization record that shows his place of birth, although he identified his place of birth as Odessa on his World War I draft registration form. However, Someone on Ancestry has posted a great deal of information about the Sorority family to a public member tree, including pictures of Harry's parents, Abraham and Katie. It says on their profile that Abraham was born in Vaknivka, and that Katie was born in Nemiriv. These two towns are quite a distance from Odessa, in the center of the country, in the Vinnytsia Oblast, near the city of Vinnytsia. So my cousins on Team Mary Sorority should check the news for updates around that area. About 2 weeks ago, a Ukrainian Air Force command center was hit there by a Russian airstrike. This brings us to our last segment of the day, and that would be a review of the Ukrainian ties of Henry's wife, my great-grandmother, Minnie Snyder Anflik, and the rest of the Snyder family. On pretty much all documents, the Snyders are identified as being from Mogilev Podolsky. This is a small city among the Dniester River on the border between Ukraine and Moldova. I'm not yet aware of any attacks on this city, and I hope it stays that way. Mogilev Podolsky is known by some as the last Jewish city in the USSR, and it is home to a vast, beautiful, historic Jewish cemetery that may well be the final resting place of some Snyder ancestors. In the current news cycle, Mogilev Podolsky has been known as an escape point, where other nations, particularly Israel, are assisting in evacuations. Minnie Snyder's passenger list and Henry Anflik's naturalization documents both list Mogilev as Minnie's place of birth. Minnie had siblings, Herman, Pauline, Lillian, Max, and Modal, who came to America at some point along with their mother, Ava. Pauline's 1920 census identifies her birthplace as Mogilev. And it's pretty rare for a census to be that specific regarding birthplaces. Lillian has her own naturalization document on which she identified Mogilev as her place of birth. And Mogilev is identified as Max's place of birth on his prison record, of all things. When Ava, Lillian, and Modal came to America in 1922, their passenger list identified their last place of residence as Bucharest, Romania. So the family left what is now Ukraine sometime between Minnie's arrival in 1907 and the rest of the family's arrival in 1922, around the time of the Russian Civil War in the early 1920s. Unlike the children, who are all listed as having been born in Mogilev, their mother, Ava, is listed as having born in Yeltushkiv, some 75 kilometers north of Mogilev Podolsky. Yeltushkiv seems like a quiet town. It doesn't seem to have appeared in the news at all, and on Wikipedia, it seems to be most famous for the discovery of an ancient Tripolite settlement there, dating back to 3200 BC. When it comes to Snyder spouses, this is an area still under active research, and we could really get into the weeds here with all of the divorces and remarriages. Just to pick a couple key figures on this side of the family, Joseph Miller, Pauline's wife, prior to her relocation to Denver, appears to have been born in Kyiv in 1890 and came to America as an infant. His parents, Bessie and Isaac, also seem to have been born and raised in Kyiv, according to an Ancestry.com public member tree. Research is unfolding on Max's ex-wife, Molly Lvov, but convincing evidence exists to suggest that she was born in Yekaterinoslav, a city now known as Dnipro. And this is an eastern city along the river of the same name. The city is listed on a naturalization document that she appears to have initiated herself some 6 months prior to her marriage to Max. is an interesting document because the pre-made form uses male pronouns, and here it is being filled out by a young lady before it was common for young ladies to do so. Dnipro has been in the news lately as a logistical hub for humanitarian aid and a reception point for people fleeing the war. Although it appears for a time to have largely avoided conflict with invading forces, its airport was recently destroyed by Russian rockets, and I imagine that this destruction will hinder escape efforts going forward. As for Lillian, she was married at least three times. First to an Isidore Beachman, who was born in Alexandria, Romania, according to Lillian's naturalization records. Lillian was later married to a Max Lecter and lived with him for a time in Alexandria, Virginia. After Max died in 1971, Lillian remarried a Harry Mitchell in Atlantic City, New Jersey. So she's a tough one to trace due to all the movements, and research on her subsequent spouses is still ongoing. I'm not quite sure yet where they were born. And that just about wraps up the show today. I hope you found it to be timely and informative. Just to recap, the main Ukrainian locations of Anflik interest are Odessa, Mykolaiv, and Voznesensk. The main locations of Snyder interest are Mogilev-Podolsky and Yeltushkiv. And once we get into in-laws and extended family, Kiev, Vinnytsia, and Dnipro also become interesting places. So as you watch the news, keep a close eye on these places and pray for peace, not only for the sake of our family historical sites and documents that may be in harm's way, but also for the people there, that they and their loved ones, who may be our distant cousins, may be safe. Next month on the podcast, the 1950 census was released on April 1st, and we'll talk about that and some early discoveries that I've made on that front. Until then, keep on digging. Your next family history adventure awaits.